And welcome to the day after a WLRN Miami Herald News post-election special. I'm Phil Latzman, and joining me here for the first part of our show is the Miami Herald's political reporter, Sergio Bustos. In just a moment, we'll hear from South Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Sergio, though, a quick assessment of what we've seen over the last 24 hours here in the state of Florida and in South Florida.
Well, I think it's interesting that we thought Florida would keep the election hanging in the balance. Fortunately, it did not. Although Florida is still too close to call the presidential race, it doesn't matter. It's a moot point. Obama took the Electoral College, and that settled it. And actually, I think there's a big sigh of relief in Florida over that. As for what Obama did, it looks like what we're writing is that the ground game, the organization he had, simply overpowered Romney. I was surprised a bit because I thought the economy in Florida, unlike Ohio, where it's better than the national kind of economy, I thought that would really hurt Obama here and keep it pretty close. It is, but I thought Obama did much better than I thought.
All right, now we're going to go on the line with Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is joining us from Chicago, where she's helped to celebrate the second term winning for President Obama last night. Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz, good to have you. Congratulations. What was it like for
you? Thank you. It's great to be with you. And well, first, I really just want to thank my constituents in the 23rd Congressional District for sending me back to represent them in our nation's capital. It's an incredible privilege, and I really look forward to it. And what it was like last night with President Obama at his victory celebration was, exhilarating, and, it's just absolutely incredible. You know, I'm so proud to have been a part of the largest, most significant grassroots presidential campaign that's ever been run. And, you know, we had volunteers by the tens of thousands knocking on doors till their knuckles bled, and voters resolutely staying in line in spite of the obstacles thrown in their way. I'm just very proud to be an American today.
Sergio, something to ask? Well, I'll ask first about the turnout, because you mentioned that before, but especially in South Florida counties, not like it was in 2008, though, but it remains to be seen whether Florida goes in the president's column. Right now, he leads by about 47,000 votes the last time I checked. Congresswoman, how important was turnout, and does Florida, keeping Florida blue, still matter?
Well, it does matter, because we are still the single largest battleground state. And when the president, and I think ultimately with those ballots that remain to be counted in Miami-Dade County, likely a good chunk of those are going to go to President Obama, and they'll be able to call the state for him. I mean, I think it sends a very strong message about the president's record of accomplishment. They threw the kitchen sink at President Obama throughout this campaign, and whether it was health care reform, Wall Street reform, rescuing the auto industry, getting the economy turned around, making progress on fighting for the middle class. You know, the Republicans were opposed to everything that he did, and for Florida to support the president and for him to win every single battleground state except for North Carolina, that says that voters in this country, Americans, like the direction that they're going. They want us to continue to move forward and didn't want to go backwards. And they also rejected extremism, I think. And then the other thing that I think it's important to note is that even though there were a handful of billionaires trying to buy the White House, buy the White House in a presidential campaign, yesterday showed that a grassroots campaign fueled by low-dollar contributions and by dedicated, devoted volunteers who simply wanted to make America better, that won the day.
Congresswoman, this is Sergio Bustos, the politics editor of the Miami Herald. Hi. Congratulations to you and your race locally,
so
as well as the national. One question closer to home. You know, during his speech last night, President Obama, in his victory speech, mentioned thanked the people who stood in the long lines all over the country. You know, that was especially true here in South Florida. My question, have you gotten, and he said we're going to fix that, I think was his words. Have you gotten any response from local election officials here in South Florida as to why the long lines were happening both during early voting and Election Day, and what they're going to do about it?
And in fact, I had a chance to talk to President Obama about this. You're really from the onset of early voting in states across the country, and particularly in ours. And, I agree with him. It is unacceptable. And I think in large part it's because with the early voting being shortened in Florida from 14 to 8 days, with the more limited number of hours. There were 24 fewer hours available for Florida voters to cast the ballot early. You had limited voting sites. The Sunday before the election was prohibited for early voting, a day in which there's a lot of people that have the time to go and vote. So the steps, unfortunately, that the Republicans took to try to stop people from voting and restrict their access to the ballot made it very difficult and made those lines longer. You know, I'm proud of our Florida voters who said, you know, there's nothing that's going to stop me. They stood in line. Last night, people were still voting in Miami-Dade County, a tremendous source of pride, at 2 in the morning. And the last voters on the last night of early voting finished voting at 2:30 in the morning. I mean, that's just unconscionable. There's no one that should have to spend 8 hours in America trying to cast their right to vote. And we absolutely need to take steps to address this.
Congresswoman, as head of the Democratic National Committee, you've made some Democratic pickups here in South Florida, in particular,
yes.
Lois Frankel, Joe Garcia, Patrick Murphy, we're just learning within the past hour or so, now officially declared the winner in District 18 over Alan West, who was sort of your arch enemy. You've exchanged barbs these past 2 years, but first of all, just the pickups for Democrats, and are you happy to see Alan West go?
Well, I'm happy that voters in Florida rejected extremism. I mean, I think that Alan West's defeat sent a strong signal that the extreme Tea Party brand of politics is not what we should be doing when it comes to continuing to move our economy forward, to focus on job creation, to work together and reach across the aisle. Look, we're not always going to agree. You know, even as the head of the Democratic Party, I know it can't always be my way. We've got to work together, and now I'm hopeful with some of the more extreme members of Congress, like Alan West, like Richard Murdoch, who didn't win in Indiana, like Todd Akin, who was not elected in Missouri, and Joe Walsh and some other Tea Party Republicans defeated last night, that we're going to be able to reach across the aisle, and I hope the Republicans are willing to join President Obama and work together. Because if there's one thing I heard across my congressional district and across the country as I traveled on behalf of the president, it was that they want us to put the vitriolic, divisive politics aside, and they want us to work together and find common ground. That's going to be critical.
Congresswoman, this is Sergio again. It looks like House Speaker John Boehner is going to be talking about this afternoon. Any indications what he might say or what tone he might take this afternoon in talking about compromise?
Well, I hope that he's going to strike a tone of compromise. He previously was not even able to get the word compromise out of his mouth in an interview he said on 60 Minutes and said that he didn't like compromise. But you know what? I think that Speaker Boehner has a slightly easier conference to deal with because some of his Tea Party and more extreme members of Congress are gone. Hopefully he'll take the high road, be a statesman, realize that we have some big challenges in front of us that we need to work together on. I'm a glasses half full person, but you know, at the end of the day, we can't forget that there was some significant things that President Obama was able to accomplish, and last night's result, which was not close at the end of the day, but last night's result sent a strong signal that President Obama has the support of the American people to continue to move us forward, and I hope our Republican colleagues recognize that.
All right, Congresswoman, quickly, final question. Yeah. How long will you remain Democratic National Committee chairwoman? Are you going to stay on the job?
Well, you know, that's a conversation for another day. The term that I'm serving as DNC chair runs through the inauguration, so, you know, I'll be in this position at least to that point, and those discussions, I'm sure, will be ongoing.
Well, congratulations on what looks to be and what was a very successful night for Democrats, especially here in the state of Florida. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, thanks for the time. Safe trip back home.
Thank you. On my way home now.
All right. So there you go, the victorious Democrat Debbie Wasserman Schultz winning her district and leading the way, leading the charge, again, raising her profile perhaps as a national figure and somebody in South Florida that we all know very well.
It's true, and you know, you got to give her credit for doing what she did because she was the face of the party on television all over the place during the campaign. I think what's interesting is the symbolic nature of the race with Patrick Murphy and Alan West. I'm wondering if we're going to go move from confrontation to compromise. But we'll have to take a wait-and-see approach to that.
And we're going to be bipartisan. We're going to hear, hopefully in a few moments, from the Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton of Miami on what she thinks about going forward. Now, before we do that, though, the lines in Miami-Dade were really the local story of the night and is the reason why Florida has yet to be counted in the presidential races. And we spoke to some voters outside the locations where there were particularly long lines last night. In fact, we found our reporter, Alexandra Leon, actually, a Miami Herald reporter, found the last person in line at the West Kendall location at the library. 1,000 people there lined up. It was about 1 or 2 in the morning before she finally voted. This is Alfie Fernandez, who had already abandoned 2 other efforts to vote, totaling 5 hours in line during early voting. She came back, waited it out, and became one of the last voters in line late last night at West Kendall Regional Library, and she says the lines were much worse than other precincts.
I actually live next door to the middle school, and there were only like 20 people there. In the fire station, it was only like 30 people. At my daughter's elementary school, my friend went, and she told me she only waited for 15 minutes. But here, disaster. Every single day, it was like this.
And still, Fernandez said this time there was no doubt she'd stick it out until she finally got to vote.
Oh, yes. And everybody that was with me in that line, all of them stayed here until the end.
And we thank the Miami Herald's Alexandra Leon for her interview with Fernandez. And during his acceptance speech, as Sergio mentioned before, President Obama made what could have been and may have been a veiled reference to Miami-Dade's problems.
Whether you voted for the very first time or waited in line for a very long time. By the way, we have to fix that.
So, do you think he was talking directly to Miami-Dade County, Sergio?
I took it that way, but then again, we're down here. But clearly, if they're looking for evidence of long lines, we were certainly Exhibit A.
We are going to hear from former Senator Bob Graham. We also expect to hear from former Senator George Lemieux, one, of course, Bob Graham, a Democrat, George Lemieux, a Republican. And we do continue to hope that we'll get Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton on the line as well. I'm Phil Latzman. We're here with Miami Herald political editor Sergio Bustos. The name of our program today is The Day After. It's our WLRN Miami Herald News post-election special. We'll take a break and come back and continue our conversations in just a moment.
It's South Florida's NPR news station, 91.3 WLRN, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. We're funded by listeners like you and by Life Policy Payout Program. With the program, you or someone you know can dispose of an unwanted or unneeded life insurance policy for a lump sum payment. Qualifications and more details at lifepolicypayout.com.
Orchestra Miami celebrates author Kurt Vonnegut's 90th birthday with an American soldier's tale. The true story of Private Eddie Slovic, the only U.S. soldier to be executed for desertion since the Civil War. This fully staged performance features 4 actors and 7 musicians performing Vonnegut's new libretto and Stravinsky's original score. Performances are Saturday, November 10 at 8 p.m. at PAX and Sunday, November 11 at 7 p.m. at Pinecrest Gardens. Details at orchestramiami.org.
And I'm Phil Latzman. Welcome back to The Day After, a WLRN Miami Herald News post-election special. And I'm Phil Latzman, joined by Sergio Bustos, Miami Herald political editor. We have a cavalcade of South Florida superstars politically that will be able to join us here in the next 40 minutes. First, though, before he was able to hop a flight this morning, I did catch up with former Florida governor and senator Bob Graham. And we talked about what might take to get the country back together. Let's hear some of that. Senator Graham, big night for Democrats in South Florida in particular, but the big job will obviously be putting the nation back together. And as you've always said, the state is purple, and we've certainly seen evidence of that. What do you think?
Well, I think what's happening is that America is becoming more like Florida has been for the last 10 or 20 years, and that is very diverse, particularly large, growing Hispanic population. the tremendous turnout of Hispanics across the country, and the percentage who voted for Barack Obama was a mirror image of what happened in Florida, and I think that's going to be a permanent change in American politics.
This was a very, very close election, no matter how you look at it. And as we speak, we still don't have Florida called. How do we repair the wounds and bring this country back together again?
Well, I'm optimistic. The election certainly pointed a general direction of where the American people wanted the federal government to go. For instance, Obamacare is now going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, and the specifics of how. I also think that the decisions on the economy, where both candidates put a premium on job creation, but President Obama, in my opinion, was focused on the long-term issues that will affect our economic well-being, such as our investment in education and research and development and infrastructure, all of which are keys to the kind of economy America's going to have 25, 50 years from now.
Forgive me for being the pessimist here, but the relationship between the president and Congress, it seems like it's never been worse. Congress's approval ratings at 7%. Do you think they'll be more willing to work with the president on a bipartisan basis?
Well, I think that, frankly, the Republican House is going to have to recalibrate itself. It started out this last 2 years, particularly with a platform that said the number one thing we want to accomplish is to deny Barack Obama a second term. Well, that's now passed, and he is going to be there for a second term. I hope that will cause the Congress to say, let's talk about what can we do to get the country moving forward. I personally believe what's going to happen is that the Congress will enact a law to have, by the summer of 2013, some fundamental changes in our tax code and in our economic policies that will get and keep America working. People had a choice as to whether they wanted an immediate now economic policy or if they wanted a longer-term policy, and they voted for the longer term, and I believe that that message was heard on both sides of the aisle, and that we're now going to see, I hope, less petty bickering and more, let's roll up our sleeves and get something accomplished.
Senator Graham, always good to talk to you. Thanks for your time this day after.
Great. Thanks, Bill.
And so we spoke about an hour ago while he was on his way to the airport. And I promise, by the way, that we're going to have some Republicans on this show as well. It's a live show, and we were expecting to hear from Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton, and hopefully we still will. We're also efforting to get former Senator George Lemieux on the line. But we do also have another South Florida congressman, a Democrat who was victorious in his race last night to be reelected for another term, and we're talking about Ted Deutsch. Congressman Deutsch, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
So, big night for Democrats. How does it feel? Do you feel like you had a successful Tuesday?
I thought it was a great night. It was a great night for Democrats. More importantly, I thought it was a great night for the country, for Florida and for the country. And we come out of this bruising campaign, or I should say campaign, since really every campaign at every level seemed especially difficult this year. And we had some tough battles and some important discussions about how to move the country forward. And now I think we need to just resolve to do it and put the campaigns behind us and figure out, as the president said last night, there how to work together. These are some serious issues that we face, and there aren't partisan solutions to them. We've got to figure out how to come together and do it.
Congressman Deutsch, this is Sergio Bustos, the politics editor at the Miami Herald.
Hi, Sergio.
Congratulations again. One question. House Speaker John Boehner is going to be talking today, I believe, in Washington at 3:30. What indications or what are you expecting from him the day after here?
Well, I hope, and I certainly hope that what the speaker will say, certainly he's not clued me into his comments. But what I hope that he'll say is that when Congress returns next week, first in the lame duck session and then looking ahead to the 113th Congress in January, that there's going to be a renewed sense of commitment to actually getting things done and a willingness to work together in order to do that. I mean, the president has now been reelected and will be serving for 4 years. So it is now impossible to simply try to block at every turn, hoping to get to the next election and see a new president. President Obama is going to be the president. The Congress is going to have to work with him. The Senate is a little more Democratic than it was before. The House is a little more Democratic than it was before. And my hope is that Speaker Boehner will be a little more willing to work across the aisle to help get things done for the country.
And you will have some more Democratic colleagues to work with, especially here in South Florida. We just heard that Patrick Murphy has officially won his race, a very close one with Alan West. And, of course, the pickups from Joe Garcia and South Dade and the Keys, and the pickup in Congressional District 22 by Lois Frankel over Adam Hasner. So that'll make your job a little bit easier in the Florida contingent?
Well, it will. Look, first of all, these are terrific. They will be terrific members of Congress. Their dedication to the public, as we've seen in this campaign, and their dedication to moving the country ahead is really impressive. All of them, Joe and Lois and Patrick and Alan Grayson is going to be joining us from up in the Orlando area. They bring vitality. They bring a sense of opportunity for all, and most importantly, they bring some real balance to the Florida delegation, which is also going to be helpful. My hope is that that the delegation will be able to work together more too in a more balanced fashion. But I can't wait to have them join me up there, and I think that they're going to do a tremendous job representing South Florida and America in Congress.
Well, Congressman Ted Deutsch, based in Boca Raton, representing parts of Broward and Palm Beach. Congratulations on your reelection and a big night for Democrats. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
And now we get the Republican perspective. Former Senator George Lemieux from Broward County, of course, interim senator from the state of Florida, made an unsuccessful bid to run this year to get the Republican nomination, lost out to Connie Mack, who lost last night to Bill Nelson, who's reelected to a third term. Senator Lemieux, welcome back to the program. Good to have you here.
Nice to be with you, Phil and Sergio.
So your reaction to what you just heard, we just had three straight Democrats, so we need the Republican perspective. is this a defeat that you guys looking at it as a defeat, or hoping that you can be bipartisan with this next term in Congress? How does it appear to a Republican right now?
Well, it was a defeat, and if you're a Republican today, you have to recognize that. If you don't recognize it, that it's a defeat, you can't learn from it. Republicans did not do as well as anyone thought they would do, especially here in Florida. We knew this race would be tight. Most of us thought that Mitt Romney would win Florida. I guess it's still too close to call, but it looks like the president's going to win Florida. And we've had these congressional seats, the ones you mentioned with Murphy defeating West. That was not expected. You had the sheriff of Broward County, who was endorsed by both the Miami Herald and the Sun Sentinel, lose on his reelection bid. So Republicans got beat. We got beat on the get-out-the-vote effort, and there's a lot of things that it points to of what our party's got to regroup and refocus on. I'm looking at some of the exit polling that was done across the nation, and if you look at the demographics of the young who voted 18 to 24, voted 60% for the president, 25 to 29, 60% for the president, 30 to 39, 55% of the president. That's the future. These folks are going to get matriculate, and they are Obama Democrats. On the issue of race, 93% of African Americans voted for the president. Not unexpected. Republicans have always had difficulty, but have done better than that number in previous years. The number that's most disconcerting for Republicans is 71% of Hispanics or Latinos voted for President Obama. That number is just it's unacceptably high if you're a Republican. And what I think we have lost in our party and what we have to get back and what we learned from Ronald Reagan, who built a broad coalition, is that we have to be the party of the common man and the common woman. We have to be the party that fights for working families, for small businesses, and not the party that's viewed as the party of the rich, not the party that's viewed as a party for only those who've already made it and not for those who are trying to make it. And that means we got to have better candidates. We've got to have better candidates with better stories, better personal stories, and we better be reaching out. If we are going to be a party of men, of white men, principally, we're going to become a minority party as that demographic continues to get smaller in this country.
Senator Lemieux, Sergio, do you believe then that Mitt Romney was the wrong candidate at the wrong time?
I don't think he was a great candidate for us. I think he would have been a very good president. Don't get me wrong. I was pleased to support him. I think he would have done a good job as president. But he did not have a compelling personal story. This is a guy who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and was able to turn it to gold. But that's not the kind of compelling story that Americans love. You know, Richard Nixon was born in a house that his father bought from Sears. Bill Clinton was born in very poor conditions. Ronald Reagan did not grow up wealthy. We like in our candidates, especially those who become our presidents, people who have the common touch and have had the common experience, who have been able to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, which is part of our American belief system. And when you are not one of those folks, and when you're in such a difficult time, a lot of Americans, I think, question whether or not you're going to be able to fight for them and whether you will fight for them. And unfortunately for Governor Romney, his 47% comment was a clarifying moment. There are moments in campaigns when a candidate does something that allows people to, in their view, see who that person really is. And I think when you take Governor Romney's background of being someone who came from a lot of wealth and then became extremely wealthy, and you combine it with that 47% comment, that was terribly damaging to Governor Romney's chances of becoming president.
Well, some candid comments there, Senator Lemieux. Now, if you were still in the Senate and knowing the gridlock that has occurred there and will probably continue to occur, even though Democrats may have picked up a seat along the way here, it won't prevent the filibuster. But what would you do? What would be your first gesture if you were still in the Senate to try and bring the country and that body back together?
Well, you welcome your new colleagues of both parties. And what I did when I was there, remember, I was only a short-term person. I was there for 16 months. Is I spent time with both Republicans and Democrats in order to build relationships, because that's how politics works. You build relationships. People will not vote for your position and will not work with you to get something done if they don't know who you are and don't have some common ground. So, for example, during those health care debates, when we were there for 30 days in a row, sometimes till 2 in the morning, I would spend time with the Democrats. Why did I spend time with the Democrats? Well, we were basically kept apart. You know, it's like armed camps up there. The Republicans eat together, spend time together. The Democrats spend all their time together. They don't want interaction. Leadership doesn't want senators from parties to have relationships with parties on the other side, because that undermines leadership. But when you build those relationships, you get things passed. I was able to get 5 things passed when we only had 40 Republicans, or 41 at the last part when I was there. I don't think that that means that I was extraordinary or exceptional. I just think that that is so, unfortunately, now unusual in Washington for people to work with people of the other side. So I'm hopeful. Our problems are so great. Our economy is so challenged. Our debt and deficit is so high that it requires people from both parties to work together. So I was heard Ted Deutch before I came on talking about working with the other side. I know he's someone who can do that. I hope that others who are getting elected or reelected to Congress are really going to sit down, because these problems are so immense that we cannot have gridlock for another 2 or 4 years.
Senator Lemieux, George Lemieux, former interim senator from the state of Florida, we appreciate your time very much on this day after.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. And we're going to switch to one of those members of Congress who will be working towards bipartisan or reaching across the aisle. She's already done that in her terms as a United States congressman representing Miami. We're talking about Republican Ileana Ross-Layton, who joins us now on our program. Congresswoman, good to talk to you. How are you doing this morning?
I am feeling so great. I'm very happy to have survived this Republican onslaught. So it's a great night. I want to thank everyone who voted whether they voted for me or not, but everyone who went out there to express their desires in the voting booth, it's just a great country. And I'm just looking at this definition of democracy and liberty by Ben Franklin. It says, democracy, two wolves and one lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. I think it's it was a pretty bloody fight, but it seemed to go very well, except for all of the malfunctions of the machines and the polling places. It was an interesting night, and democracy won. And, you know, I was born in a country where they don't have democracy or elections or the right to vote. So every election is, election day is like Christmas and Hanukkah for me. I'm very happy to participate, and thank you to all the voters for making our democracy the strongest one in the world.
Sergio, you want to add something in there?
Congresswoman, again, congratulations on
hey,
your
Sergio,
victory.
Sergio, how are you doing?
Very good, very good. You know, you talked about the long lines, Congresswoman. I was wondering, that's become a huge issue now in the aftermath of the election. What do you want to see done? Because the lines were extremely long, both in Miami-Dade and Broward. What do you
want
to see done?
I don't want to burden the counties with a lot of cost, and it is costly for counties to do many days of early voting. So I realize that, you know, people get upset when we keep passing regulations in Congress, but we don't give the locals the money to implement those regulations. So it's fine and haughty for me to say, well, let's have more voting days. Well, somebody's got to pay for it. So I think maybe one of the ways that we could do it is encourage more voting by mail. We have seen that that can be done if we get rid of those boleteras that is totally illegal and make people have faith in voting by mail as a good system. That might be a very worthwhile endeavor. But this election was a disaster in terms of not functioning in the correct way. We have to have the integrity of the voting system. It is the hallmark of our representative democracy. So at least let's do elections right.
Well, Congressman, if I can interrupt for a second, though, they did trim the number of days from 14 to 8, and there were a lot of problems with absentee ballots. So what's the solution, though? I didn't understand.
Well, but see, it was a very, not only that, but it was a very complicated ballot. So it was like a perfect storm of not having enough days to vote, coupled with a complicated ballot and people who, rightfully so, we have busy lives. It's nice to say to people, do your homework at home and come with the ballot already marked up. But for some of them, they thought, well, maybe I'll just lightly go over these at the voting booth. And boy, some of the voters took an awfully long time. I'm not blaming the voter. I'm just saying it's not right to have a complicated ballot and tell people, do your homework beforehand. They're not going to do it because our lives are too difficult. So number one, if we can extend the voting days without being a terrible financial problem for the counties, then that would be a good thing. If we can encourage more people to vote by mail. And number two, let's not have all of these ballot questions on one day. Surely these are some measures that could have waited for the next election and then the election after that. But to have over 20 ballot initiatives turned people off a lot, and there was a big drop-off. People go to vote for the president, at most for the U.S. Senator, maybe for members of Congress. So it takes a lot to encourage them to go down ballot. It's very tough.
Congresswoman, to wrap up here, everybody's been talking about the disparity in the Hispanic vote, 71% nationwide going for President Obama, I guess less of a percentage here in Florida, and I think that's thanks to the Cuban vote, and if you've mentioned your Cuban heritage. How do you correct that, and how do you become that party of the big tent that Ronald Reagan talked about 30 years ago again?
Well, the first thing that we have to do is that we have to admit that there's a problem. For everybody who's got a problem with addiction, the first thing you do is admit you have a problem. I think that our party is unable to reach that conclusion yet. We have one disastrous election after the next. We see that minorities are rejecting us. We see that women voters are rejecting us. We see that young people are rejecting us, and we're not concluding, dude, we have a problem. So first of all, admit you have a problem. And then secondly, let's try to fashion our message in a way that doesn't disenfranchise complete communities. Don't do something like say that they are legitimate rapes and illegitimate rapes, that you don't know where you stand on key issues. I mean, this was a disaster for so many of our candidates. You want to just knock them on the side of the head and say, where have you been? Do you know what year this is, guys? Get with it. So I think we're optimistic that when we have visionary leaders like Marco Rubio, like the recently elected U.S. Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, he's young, he's smart, he's energetic. We have a good future in the Republican Party. Let's listen to those young voices and snap it up. And maybe if these congressional candidates could, I don't know, talk to their daughters or their granddaughters, find out what in the world has been going on in the past 50 years, they could get on with it. But we need to do better. We need to sharpen our game because we're headed for a bad place.
Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton, thanks very much for your time and your candidness.
Thank you. Thank you. Very happy. And thank you to the voters. Thank you.
Congratulations on your reelection, which I think says a lot about her as far as her bipartisan. She's taken a stand on gay marriage. She's done things that other Republicans have not and may have to follow her example on.
No, certainly. And she's also been one, she and Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz have always kind of tried to work together as opposed to be confrontational.
All right. Let's see if I can do this correctly. And I'm going to attempt to try and punch up two very special guests who will be on at the same time. But before we do that, we're going to take a break because we have to do that. So stand by, Senator Ana Terry Flores and Senator Nan Rich. We're going to talk about state issues when we come back and we continue. It's the day after our post-election special here on WLRN. Stay tuned.
It's 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for this special program today. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery are offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center. 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life. I'm like a weeping willow. Five-time Grammy Award winner Diana Krall launches the Glad Rag Doll Tour in Miami. On April 2nd, the Arch Center will be the first U.S. venue to feature music from Diana Krall's new critically acclaimed studio album, Glad Rag Doll, an exhilarating and adventurous exploration of new sounds, new instrumentation, and new musicians. Diana Krall, April 2nd at the Adrian Arch Center. Information at archcenter.org. That's where the souls of my tears.
When your loved one has a terminal illness, your entire world changes. And every step of the way, Hospice of Palm Beach County and Hospice of Broward County are there. Not all hospices are the same. As nonprofits, Hospice of Palm Beach County and Hospice of Broward County are committed to providing medical, emotional, and spiritual care that's based on patients' needs and comfort, allowing them to stay in their own home and continue seeing their own doctor. Information is available at 866-704-2574.
And we welcome you back to the day after our post-election day special here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Sergio Bustos has been taken out of the game. He's doing another interview. We're bringing in a relief pitcher, Patricia Mazzei, who is a government and political reporter for the Miami Herald as we continue on in our final segment. Hi, Patty. Good to see you again.
Hey, Phil. Happy to be in the bullpen.
And coming in, throwing fastballs. And we wanted to mention that there was some state stuff that was very important, including the amendments and the battle in the Florida Senate, which pit two incumbent South Florida lawmakers against each other. And Democrats had another win there. The battle for Senate District 34, Maria Sachs defeated Republican Ellen Bogdanoff, while Florida's voting districts were redrawn. They chose to run against each other for the new district covering parts of southern Palm Beach County and northern Broward County. And during a victory party last night, Sachs said Democrats defeated a corporate machine that beats up, quote, the little guy.
This was about the power of money, of corporate greed, and the arrogance of power trying to take over the people. And today, today is a victory for the people.
And the fight for that Senate District 34, one of the most closely watched races in Florida. If Bogdanoff had won, Republicans would have held on to a two-thirds majority in the Senate that would allow them to pass legislation without even consulting Democrats. And as we mentioned, the state constitutional amendments, which took a long time for people to get through, 11 of them on the ballot, the longest ballot in Florida history. Voters threw out 8 of those amendments, among them the huge property tax overhaul, an anti-abortion amendment, the so-called religious freedom amendment. They also said no to the religious institutions, as we mentioned, also an amendment that would have put the state in conflict with federal law, Amendment 1, asking the state whether they could force people to buy health insurance. However, amendments, 3 other ones, gave tax relief to veterans, spouses of military veterans killed in duty, and poor senior citizens, all did pass with the 60% margin. So now let's head to back to the phones. We have two very special guests with us. One is Republican State Senator Anna Terry Flores. And another is Democratic State Senator Nan Rich, the latter from Broward County, the former from Dade County. Senators, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So first, starting with Senator Rich, is there a better mood among Democrats in the state legislature today?
I would say there certainly is. It was a good night, both on the national level and on the state level. For Democrats, starting, of course, with the president, going to a number of United States Senate seats, where I'm happy to say that those kind of very radical people who had some very negative things to say about women's issues were defeated, and then moving on to the state, as you mentioned, where as the Democratic leader over the last 2 years, I had 12 Democrats, and that enabled the Republicans to have a supermajority. And this last night, we were able to pick up 2 seats, which brings the number to 14 and eliminates that supermajority that the Republicans had, which I think is going to be very beneficial in terms of people working together, because I think the closer the balance is and the less you have those kind of, you know, rigid majority situations, the better and easier it is for people to work together.
Senator Flores, do you agree?
You know, I think that I couldn't agree more with what Congresswoman Ross Layton was saying a little earlier, that, you know, the great thing about last night is that democracy won, and we can prove that this is a nation, and here at home, that this is a state where there can be transitions of power peacefully, and we can settle our differences at the ballot box. I'm definitely very sad on a personal level to see my friend Ellen Bogdanoff out of the Florida Senate. She was an incredible advocate, a great leader. But what it shows last night is that, you know, the legislature, we followed the law when it came to redistricting. That caused that there were some incumbents, two well-liked incumbents. I mean, listen, I get along really well with Senator Maria Sachs as well, and we voted similarly sometimes on issues. But because of redistricting, there were two well-liked incumbents that were drawn into the same district. They both fought very hard. And I think the person who best reflects the voters of that district is the person who won. And, it's nice sometimes from a partisan point of view, of course, to have that two-thirds majority. But Senator Rich says it, you know, she hit the nail on the head in saying that this will require some more negotiating and reaching across the aisle on behalf of both the Republicans and the Democrats. And I think that what we saw last night nationally as well is that this is a very split nation, and what we hope as leaders is that we can, we can work together and work out some of those differences as best as we can.
Patty Mazzei, you have a question for the two lawmakers.
Hi, Senators. Senator Flores, I was wondering, we've been asking folks this question this morning. You and your fellow kind of Miami Republicans have been more moderate than some of your counterparts in the Senate. How do you see the party going from here? I mean, we had some results last night in still potentially up in the air with Chris Dorworth in mm-hmm. Orlando. There were some close results in Miami-Dade unexpectedly for Representatives Frezen and Bileka. Where do you guys go from here, do you think?
And by the way, Representative Dorworth was in line to become House Speaker, and he's currently trailing by about 30 votes. Could be a recap. That's an Orlando district. But anyway, I'm sorry. Continue,
no,
Senator
it's okay.
Flores.
First and foremost, I want to thank Twitter publicly because thanks to Patricia Mazzei and Mark Caputo yesterday, Twitter became my new best friend. And really, really, I mean that seriously. Thank you guys for great reporting all throughout the day yesterday and over the last couple of days.
Thank you.
So it was been great. But, you know, look, this is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call for Republicans, obviously across the country, but certainly across the state. I think that I can't beat around the bush on that. I think that, you know, Representative Fez and Representative Bileka are two very strong incumbents who have taken, you know, tough issues, have not taken some tough issues, you know, but I mean, people have definitely worked hard on behalf of their constituencies, and to have close calls is a wake-up call. Obviously, if Chris Dorworth is ultimately defeated after a recount, that will send shockwaves throughout the entire Capitol. You know, the House will have to figure out kind of what they want to do here over for the next 2 years. That's what happens. It's what happens in elections. Elections have consequences. And, you know, on as far as South Florida specifically, I mean, you know, I think that we're more moderate on different issues that are specific, important to us locally. And I've said this often, you know, a lot of the battle lines in Tallahassee are regional and not as partisan. And of course, the issue that comes most to light on that are pocketbook issues, property taxes and property mm-hmm. insurance. And so we hope that some of the messages that have been sent, I think, across the state, particularly down in South Florida, is to say on those pocketbook issues, you know, the biggest counties in South Florida, the biggest counties in the state, hopefully will have a bigger say when it comes to those two issues of taxes and property insurance.
Senator Rich, do you see a cabal for you, the use of a better word, I guess there's probably a better one out there, but you guys getting together, South Florida representatives sort of bonding together no matter what the party to promote the interests of our region?
Well, I think that we have tried to do that over the years, particularly when it comes to public school funding, some of the health care issues regarding Jackson Memorial. There are, you know, there are many issues where the South Florida delegation has tried to, and I believe has worked together. But I do want to mention that, you know, these amendments, this is how we started this conversation, these amendments were all put on the ballot by a Republican-controlled legislature. They created the longest ballot in probably Florida history, contributing to the long wait, jams, scammers, and to the situation where Florida is the only state that has not been able to report its election results out to for the Electoral College count. And I think that there's, it goes back to this thing about having kind of a better balance, because there's a certain arrogance of power if you have such a strong majority. And these amendments, I think, are proof of that. There are things, the people were smart, they got it. These amendments were all put on there by the legislature. There was not a single one that was a citizen initiative. And people began to realize, because of the length of the amendments, the difference between when citizens put something on the ballot and it's restricted to 75 words, and then you have these long paragraphs that with conflicting wording that people have difficulty understanding. But as I said, I was so proud that people actually cut through it. And you had a couple of amendments there that were very damaging that were put on, and they were put on, by a partisan vote. And that's what I think we have to work, to correct. The so-called Religious Freedom Amendment, which was soundly defeated, which was not a Religious Freedom Amendment, but rather an attempt, I believe, to allow public funding of our taxpayer funding for our religious schools and institutions, mm-hmm. the voters rejected that. The voters rejected Amendment 6, again, which has a lot to do with the privacy part of our state constitution,
right,
which protects women to make that very personal decision on their own. I mean, these are very confrontational yeah, kinds of issues that were put on this ballot. And
Senator,
I think it's because, you know, because you can if you have that kind of a tremendous majority.
Senator Nan Rich and Senator Anna Terry Flores, we could go on. Unfortunately, the clock is telling us we have to wrap things up. But thank you both so much for coming on and coming on together. And we wish you the best of luck in the upcoming session, which we look forward to covering.
Great. Thank you guys thank so you. Much. We appreciate
thank
it.
You. All right. Bye. Thank you both very much. So, Patty, while we have you for a moment, I would just second the great job that the Miami Herald's political reporters did, and especially you, and with the long lines and the absentee and the early voting. You should be following Patty, not only her stories in the paper, but there are a couple of things that we should talk about as far as Miami-Dade and local. You're a government reporter for Miami-Dade County. How did the charter amendments and what were some other major things that were decided in Miami-Dade County that may have flown under the radar yesterday?
Well, county commissioners will now be subject to 2 4-year terms. So 8-year term limits for Miami-Dade commissioners was a big charter change that the voters approved yesterday. There will be a new commissioner on the dais, former state representative Juan Zapata defeated his challenger Manny Machado in an open seat. 2 incumbents, Commissioner Bruno Barrero and Audrey Edmondson, won. We're still waiting for absentee ballots in the Barrero race against State Representative Luis Garcia. That one was closer than expected, considering that Barrero almost avoided a runoff altogether. So that one was closer than folks thought.
And the Pets Trust referendum also passed, right? And what does that mean?
Well, it's a non-binding question that asked voters if they would be willing to raise their property tax rate slightly in order to try to fund animal services programs to avoid killing as many, you know, animals as get killed in the county shelters each year. But it's non-binding, so now it goes to the county commission. The ball is in their court as to what to do with that.
All right, and what do you be working on quickly at MiamiHerald.com? You're still working the phones, still lots to talk about. Again, Miami-Dade not settled as far as voting right now. What are you guys working on over there?
Well, we're waiting for the results, and and just to kind of maybe get a play-by-play of why we saw the long lines yesterday. Mayor Carlos Jimenez went to one of the sites late last night and saw the big crowds and apologized and said he was embarrassed. So we're going to follow up on that.
Miami Herald political and government reporter Patricia Mazzei. Thank you, Patty, for coming in.
Thank you, Phil.
And thanks also to Miami Herald political editor Sergio Bustos and to all of our guests, congresspeople and senators we heard from, to our producers, Elaine Chen, Alicia Zuckerman, Peter Jay as well, our program director, and everybody else involved in the program. We have the Florida Roundup on Friday at noon. We hope you'll join us for that as we'll recap the week with journalists. It's been an historic week and day, last 24 hours in South Florida. I'm Phil Latzman. You've been listening to The Day After, our post-election special. Thanks for listening.
It's South Florida's NPR news station, 91.3 WLRN.